Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, off and running on Tuesday, the 23rd of July, 2024. We are now more than midway through our 14th year with our radio project. We are coming to you from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 KVOI The Voice. You can hear our program with live stream at buckmastershow.com. And when we do our telephone interviews, the live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. All right, one of the most endangered animals in the world lives here in southeast Arizona in relative isolation in the upper elevations of the pine forests of Mount Graham. Since the end of the Ice Age, about 10,000 years ago, the Mount Graham red squirrel has lived in isolation from other squirrels. In fact, there was a time in the 1960s it was thought that the animal had gone extinct. Researchers at the University of Arizona are studying the food hoarding behavior of the Mount Graham red squirrel, and hopefully they'll be learning more about this animal so we can protect it and make sure it doesn't go extinct. Joining us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Sean Mahoney is a research scientist with the School of Natural Resources and the Environment in the College of Agriculture, Life, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Arizona. He's also part of the Mount Graham biology programs. He studies the ecology and evolution of adaptive traits and behavior and the conservation of threatened habitats where vulnerable plants and animals live. Hey, Sean, how are you?
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Tell me a little bit about how many of the Mount Graham red squirrels are now left, and how has this little animal managed to avoid extinction?
Yeah, so our group continuously monitors the population of Mount Graham red squirrels in the Pinaleños. And as of December 2023, our estimates are that there's only 144 red squirrels left on the mountain.
Wow.
That's quite a low number, but they have even been lower than that. As recently as 2017, there was a tremendous wildfire, the Fry Fire. Maybe many of your listeners remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And the population went down to as low as 35 individuals. So they've been even lower than they are now. They've actually, it's been an improvement in recent years, but that's still quite a low number than what historically has been on the mountain.
What's their survival? I mean, what kind of protocols are they using to survive? They've got to be highly susceptible to the environmental changes, Sean.
Yeah, that's the biggest threat that Mount Graham red squirrels face, really, is habitat loss. And the biggest contributor of habitat loss on Mount Graham are these extreme wildfires. And after over 100 years of fire suppression, fires now, unfortunately, are just so large that the system really hasn't evolved those sorts of extreme disturbance events. So they can have these profound effects on red squirrels, but also just the ecosystem more broadly on Mount Graham.
So is their food source dwindling at all? And they are pretty good, I guess, at protecting what food they do have, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So that is one of these big fires contribute to their population declines, in that they remove the food that Mount Graham red squirrels eat. And red squirrels are interesting in that they eat the seeds of pine, spruce, and fir cones. And understanding how red squirrels can find food is probably one of the most important behaviors that we as conservation biologists can use to understand what's contributing to their population declines. Because if animals can't find food, then they won't be able to do the other important things that they need to do, like reproduce. And so finding food is critical to their conservation. And red squirrels, they're a small animal, but they are really interesting in that they will rigorously defend their food source. And what red squirrels do is during the summer, they go around and they collect food and they don't eat it right away. They take it back to their territory and they bury it in a big pile of debris that the squirrels have built up over time. And by doing that, the squirrels can put a bunch of food in there and it protects the food from the elements and it prevents the food from spoiling. Wow. And so essentially, these mounds of debris, we refer to them as middens, they act as a refrigerator. And just as we put food into our refrigerator to preserve it until we're ready to eat it, that's what red squirrels are doing as well.
Smart. Sounds like.
Yeah.
They're on to something there. I want to talk a little bit about the results of that study that you and your team. The study was published recently in the Journal of Animal Ecology, and I guess you guys looked over a 25-year period. What were the kind of the bottom line to that, Sean Mahoney?
Yeah, so what we noticed when we were out in the field studying the squirrels, we noticed that they had their central midden where they've stored their food, but we also started noticing these smaller piles of food within their territory. And we thought that was sort of an interesting and kind of odd behavior. So we looked into the literature, and what we found was that red squirrels are, it's well documented that red squirrels will form a midden to store their food, but they will also scatter hoard food. And that just means taking smaller amounts of food and hiding it over a larger area. And red squirrels actually do both of these. And we just wanted to understand what are the factors that are contributing to whether red squirrels on Mount Graham are storing it at one place or storing it at many places. And again, because it's so important to understand how animals access food in terms of conservation, we thought this was a really important question to answer. And one of the things that we thought might contribute to this behavior is population density, meaning how many squirrels are in the area. And we thought that if there's a lot of squirrels in the area, they might experience a lot of competition for food. And under that scenario, it might be more advantageous to put your food in one place, because then you can more easily defend it from competitors than if you've got food scattered across the environment. That would be more difficult to defend. But because populations have decreased, the red squirrel population density right now is really low. And so it could be that the squirrels are not experiencing much competition from other squirrels for food. And so they might start shifting to other behaviors. And so we tested that hypothesis, like you said, with nearly a quarter century long data set, starting in 1998, up until 2021, and we found support for this hypothesis. When there's more squirrels, higher population density, squirrels will store more food in their middens. And at lower population densities, they might not experience a lot of competition, and they start doing more of this scatter hoarding behavior. Now, we need to a bit more because this is just an initial study, but it gives us insight into the flexibility of how red squirrels can find food, and it suggests that maybe this is how they were able to survive these periods of these big mega fires when habitat was wiped out. They weren't locked into one behavior. They were a bit more flexible in what they could do, and that's a really interesting idea from a conservation perspective.
We're speaking with Sean Mahoney, a research scientist with the School of Natural Resources and the Environment in the College of Agriculture, Life, and Environmental Science at the University of Arizona. We have a caller wants to ask a quick question. I believe his name is Ted. Ted, go ahead. You're with Sean.
Yeah, so I've seen programs about the red squirrels in Ireland and England. Especially in England, they're having pressure from larger gray squirrels and stuff. And I didn't know if this was as a remnant from the Ice Age, if these squirrels, red squirrels on Mount Graham, are related to those in Europe.
Hmm. Interesting question. Sean, do you have any idea?
Yeah, so the red squirrels in Europe, they're in a different genus. Their genus is Sciurus. And the red squirrels on Mount Graham are Tamia Sciurus. So they're in a different genus. They're in the same family, but different a different genus. Now, the Sciurus, the European red squirrel, that is the same genus as Abert squirrels, which occur also in Arizona. They're really common in Flagstaff, and they also occur. They were introduced on Mount Graham, actually. And if you look at a photo of a European red squirrel and an Abert squirrel, they both have these big ears with tufts on the top. So they look really similar. But thank you for that question. They are not as closely related as some of the other squirrels in North America.
All right, Sean, we're going to let you go. But are you fairly confident that the population will stay at about 130?
Well, we're going to have to see. Yeah, I mean, there's some ongoing efforts to prevent wildfire from getting too big up there now. There's doing forest thinning. The Forest Service is doing some forest thinning to prevent the influence of wildfire up there. And just for your listeners, Mount Graham is a great place to visit. It's a great place to escape the heat. And if you go up there, I would encourage you just be mindful of the red squirrel. You might see it on the road. So keep your speed down when you're driving up the mountain. And if you do any camping up there, it's really important to be mindful of fire restrictions. And if you do build a campfire, just make sure that you properly extinguish your fire when you're visiting the mountain.
Okay, Sean, we're going to have to let you go. But where is Mount Graham? Give our listeners a quick update on how to get there.
Yeah, thanks for that final question. Mount Graham, it's in the Pinaleno Mountains, which is in the Gila River Valley, and it's just south of the city of Safford in Arizona. So it's about a 2.5-hour drive from Tucson, northeast.
Okay. Sean Mahoney, thank you very much. Good information. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
All right. Let's take a break right here. After the break, we'll talk with Shelley Fishman. Shell, how are we doing today? Oh, kind of flat, huh? We'll find teetering. We'll find out more. Shelley Fishman right after this.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up.
With science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate termites, bugs, weeds, especially now during termite season.
No spray cans and lighters?
Nope, only termite solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh, Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Shelly Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelly via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And one of the things that Shelly Fishman and I have in common, we both like squirrels.
Oh. Squirrels get to inherit the earth.
Yeah. The red squirrel. I'm so glad the smart little things with their food hoarding. Well, on Wall Street today, sort of.
Yeah, we're at least in positive territory. We were yesterday, too. It's interesting, Bill, because after what happened on Sunday with President Biden deciding not to pursue re-election.
Huge day. Huge day in American
instantly
history.
Instantly what happened was that the futures for the equity markets bumped up.
Uh-huh.
And that made me think we need to have this discussion again.
Yeah.
We had it a couple of weeks ago about, you know, what happens between July and Election Day, and then what happens in the markets between Election Day and Inauguration Day.
Do we know?
We do. Hmm. We don't know why necessarily, but we do have statistics. And so my first reaction was to say the first thing we need to do is talk about the fact that statistically there is no indication that anything that happens prior to Election Day will give you any good direction as to how you should invest your money. It's kind of a free-for-all. If we go back, you know, 25 or 30 years, the average gains or losses, regardless of who wins, between July and Election Day is 1%.
Yeah.
Gain of 1%. So
it's a wash.
You know, if it's the Dems who win, that gain is statistically 3%. If it's the Republicans who win, it's a negative 3%.
Hmm.
But you don't know on the way to Election Day who's going to win. So that's absolutely
so
meaningless
kind of difficult
statistic.
To invest based on that.
Right. Now, between Election Day and Inauguration Day, January 20th, we do have some different numbers. The average gain or loss, and again, I'm going back to 1982, is 2%.
Okay.
5% if the Dems win and negative 1% if the Republicans win.
Hmm.
So that's kind of interesting. We had an anomaly to that with the time between the election in 2016 and Trump taking the presidency in 2017. There was a 9% gain.
Oh,
In the movement there.
Hmm.
Similarly, in 2020, there was a 5% gain for Biden. But again, when I take a look at what's happened over some statistically meaningful point in time, it's nothing you can take real investment advice from.
Well, there is something that you could do as an investor. You could lock in some of these higher interest rates.
Bingo. So that's what my mind went to. I said, you know, if you believe as an investor that there are some things you need to do to adjust as we get to the end of a year, to adjust your portfolio, and if you think that part of that adjustment should be fixed income, you have an incredible opportunity right now. And as you know, Bill, when we talk about market timing, that's just a horrible thing to even think about doing.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm seeing ads for FDIC-guaranteed CDs.
Yeah, the government backs them.
The government-backed them. Yep. CDs for 8%.
Wow.
And, you know, they're five-year CDs, but, uh-huh. locking
so
in
So you lock that in for 5 years.
You
that's
know,
not
as
bad.
Part of your,
yeah.
As part of the conservative
sure.
portion of your portfolio, I'm seeing guarantees of 8.5% on some 8.5% annual growth on some annuities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we haven't seen numbers like that in, since the end of the Nixon administration when inflation was really high. But we know for a fact, because he said so, that the Fed is going to begin to lower interest rates, and that will bring fixed income returns down. Now, it might not be instantaneous. You know, we know we're going to see at least one interest rate cut this year, maybe two. And so if you get together with your financial advisor and talk about what your portfolio looks like and talk about what you have in that portfolio that is, you know, if you're a young person, maybe 30% fixed income. If you're an older person like you and me, maybe 70% fixed income.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a bad discussion to have to say, what can I do with the stuff I'm holding to convert it for at least the next 5 or 6 years to these higher interest fixed income issues. And that is a worthwhile discussion to have. Strictly speaking, it's not really market timing because, again, we're looking at guarantees.
Mm-hmm.
When you buy a bond that says, or a CD that says 8% on it, and you hold it to maturity, you're going to get 8% a year.
Yeah,
period. End of story.
8%.
Right. If you buy an annuity that gives you a guarantee on the way to annuitization of that instrument, that says 8.5%, on the way, that's the minimum that you can gain. If the investments underlying that annuity, in the case of a variable annuity, are making more than that, you'll gain more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But the minimum you can gain is 8.5%.
Which is pretty darn good, right?
Which is pretty darn good. Now, the problem with annuities is that they come with all sorts of expenses,
mm-hmm.
and very often they also come with a period of time during which there are penalties if you sell the annuity. But you don't buy an annuity because you're going to sell it. You
mm-hmm.
buy an annuity because you want to hold it until a certain point in your life, and then you start taking income from it, income that can never go down once you start taking it. And in the basis for that income will be guaranteed 8%, 8.5%, whatever is in that contract you wrote. That guarantee will be 8% or 8.5%, whatever it is, every year until you start taking that income. Now, you know, will an annuity ever be your best investment? No, of course not. But, you know, if you're going to guarantee me a minimum of 8.5% for the next decade,
mm-hmm.
and then I can take that for the rest of my life, I'm thinking, you know, I want some of that.
Yeah.
And so be really careful when you hire an investment advisor that you can have that discussion and they don't automatically say, we don't sell that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you shouldn't do this on your own. You shouldn't do it with somebody who only sells one product from one manufacturer. You should get an advisor who, number one, is a fiduciary acting on your behalf, not necessarily on that person's behalf. And the second thing is you should get an advisor who can point you to in one place where you can have products from various manufacturers so that you can pick the one that's right for you. You know, that's the advice I always give, but right now is a really good time to start looking at the fixed income portion of your portfolio and see if it makes sense to lock in some higher rates.
Yeah, I mean, that's very tempting when you're talking about 8%.
Yeah, and you know, and you don't have to do it with an annuity. You can what they call you can ladder bonds. So you get a 5-year bond, you get a 10-year bond, an 8-year bond, one, and you don't necessarily buy them when they're issued. So you can get one that's 5 years away from maturity, 6 years, 7 years, and they mature, you know, over time. You know exactly what you're going to get. You can roll it over into something else if the rates are okay, or you can then take that money and reinvest it in something that's more more liquid. But it's a part of everybody. It should be a part of everybody's investment portfolio. And now is just a great time to take a look at it.
Great advice. Thank you, Shelley. Have a great week.
You too, Bill.
All right. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, perfect time of year to go over there and make sure you get some beautiful things for your garden. A lot of people have had hail damage already. Had a couple of very violent storms this summer, and they need some replacements in the garden. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. 13-acre site, everything you need for your garden and some beautiful items at Zocalo Village. Imported Talavera pottery from Mexico. They've got you covered over at Green Things. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, we're going to go now on the live line and bring in our contributor on faith and spirituality, Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church here in Tucson, where I worship. And we're so happy to have Father Robert as one of our contributors, two dozen or so contributors. And Father Robert, I was so hoping to see you seated across from me in studio, but you got back from your trip to England, and there was an unexpected twist, correct?
Yes, one hopes to bring back his memories, but I got to bring back COVID, so there you go.
Had you previously had a bout with COVID?
I've had it, I think, two other times, and so this has been the most mild, thank goodness.
Good. Hope you're on the mend. All right. Tell us about your trip. I know that was a big trip for you, going over to England with the choir, and you all went on a youth pilgrimage. How did that go?
It was great. So we took a total of 68 parishioners first to Lincoln Cathedral. And our choir is saying there is kind of part of their daily services, which was lovely. And so you get to sing music written in those places for those spaces and get to sing that there, which is really a gift. And then from there, we took a dozen of our youth and chaperones onto a place called Walsingham, which bills itself as England's Nazareth, which was, historically there was supposedly a vision of the Virgin Mary there. And so we went to go visit that site, which is just a lovely place and kind of has an important place in English religious history. And so that was a huge gift all around. The whole trip was really, really wonderful up until I started realizing what souvenirs I brought back.
Yeah. You know, I had to look it up, but Lincoln has a lot of history, Lincoln, England, and the cathedral there is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's one of the, it's kind of one of these places that for a while was a principal city of the country, really, because it was a Roman fort. There's a sort of hill there where, it began as a Roman military outpost. And then from there has been, a castle and then all sorts of different things. And it's been kind of at the center of English history, in part because of its location. It's kind of strategic location in the middle of the country. For example, the Magna Carta was read there, and William Byrd, who's sort of a famous composer of English church music, the first composer really of English language church music, now was there for 20 years. And so it has this really interesting kind of, St. Hugh was one of the first people to bring Christianity into England, and he was there. And so it's got this kind of fascinating history all parts of English history are represented there in some way or another. It's kind of amazing. Even there's a restaurant in, not too far from the cathedral where the first designs for the tank were put together. So it's got this kind of interesting, every phase of English history, it's had some sort of intersection with it.
You wrote recently, you've been thinking a lot about stability. And I was thinking, as you were talking about pilgrimage, and these traditions, many of these traditions that we have in the church, I think build some kind of a stable foundation in one's life. At least that's my belief. What are some of your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the more things seem to kind of be spinning out of control in our wider culture, I think that the more people need those touchstones in their lives that feel like they, that lend them a sense of place and purpose that are beyond the kind of concerns of the day. And there's a kind of wonderful saying from the Middle Ages where it says, as the world turns, the cross remains fixed. And I think it's that that kind of notion that that we have a fixed place in our life around which we gather our meaning and our purpose. And so much of that is some of that is familial, you know, something as simple as recipes and trips we make every year or vacations we take with families, to the more complicated, like a pilgrimage to the Holy Land or to various places, or you know, various kinds of traditions, holidays, celebrations, all those things that really kind of form the backbone of who we are and what we're about. And a lot of that stuff gets kind of squeezed out by the busyness of our times and our life. But I think it's when we look back in our lives, we realize more and more the value of that kind of stability and that kind of backbone to our life.
Ask Alexa. Everybody asks Alexa. Everybody wants, Father Robert, an easy answer. They want an instant answer, you know, what's the mystery of life, Alexa? Well, you're not going to get that. There are some questions that we will not readily know the answer to, at least perhaps in this lifetime. And I think that's where faith comes in. What about you? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for Christians, I think that the promise is not that we'll go through a life without suffering or without questions, but that in the midst of that suffering, in the midst of those questions, God is with us. You know, and for a religion where we name God Emmanuel, God, which literally means God with us, I think it implies a certain kind of companionship with God that is it's beyond trying to answer questions, and it's more about sort of reaching for a deeper meaning and purpose that probably we won't attain in this life. And I think the more we become comfortable with that, I think the more we come to be seen as wise. You know what I mean? That the folks in my life who have made peace in some way or another with all that transpires in life, knowing that they have some sort of deeper spiritual grounding, those are the folks that I come to think of as being wise. And I think that comes of not, you know, constantly striving to try and get every answer right, but trying to get every relationship right. Those are the people that I think really, really seem to thrive in this life, whether that's a relationship with their family, with God, with those who have come before them, those who kind of come after them. That seems to be more and more where I wish our cultural energy was, on deepening our relationships with one another, rather than just trying to be right all the time, which seems to be sort of toxic.
You know, I was thinking about pilgrimage. I hadn't realized there was the pilgrimage like you did in England. Of course, people think of the pilgrimage in Spain, the Camino, Spain and parts of Portugal. But there are also some people are doing a pilgrimage on the west coast of the 21 missions. You know, they're actually walking from mission to mission. But I guess we could do kind of mini pilgrimages just in our daily life, couldn't we?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, at best, I think our lives become kind of like a pilgrimage, right? So you know, they involve a constant kind of searching and questing and sort of looking for kind of deeper answers. And you know, whenever I take someone on a pilgrimage, I say the first thing you have to remember is that this isn't travel. It's not tourism. And I think so much of our life is a tourist experience where we're trying to get something out of it, or we're trying to kind of, you know, squeeze everything we can out of it. And pilgrimage is the opposite thing, right? It's about sort of having something sort of revealed to us, and not kind of forcing it to happen. It's about sort of what can we offer, what can we give up in the course of our Christian journey that reveals more of who we are and kind of more of who God is to us. And that to me is that, you know, I think the more we can sort of shape our lives in that way, where we're thinking about how can we be, searching and questing, but also willing to sacrifice and offer something in the course of that journey to shape the journey of the people around us. And that's one thing that's quite different about a pilgrimage is it's a pack activity. It's about how is the whole group participating in this thing together. And, you know, one of the most moving moments I ever had, if you go to Jerusalem, the site of the historic site of the crucifixion is thought to be, you know, it's up some very steep, slippery stairs. And a woman was with us in the group, and she was 92. And she said, "I've come all this way, and I don't want to miss this. Will you carry me up there?"
Mm.
Which I did.
Wow.
You know, but how often in our journey are we unwilling to ask for help, right? How many of us would be embarrassed to say, "I can't make it up these stairs. I need someone to carry me." And I think that's all part of pilgrimage, right? It's supporting one another. It's being supported. And so I think that's, if you take those lessons to your broader life, I think it's amazing how much richer our lives would be if we had that kind of healthy vulnerability with one another.
You know, if she hadn't asked for help, and many people, I don't know, a lot of people wouldn't have asked for help, Father Robert. They would have just come all that way and just say, you know, I'm just going to have to pass. I just can't make it physically.
Yeah, and I think about that a lot. I mean, there's so many times where our pride gets in the way of a kind of deeper experience. You know, and I think so. There's, you know, the sort of crowning virtue in our lives, I think, is humility. And I think that's such a great example of humility, where you sort of recognize, hey, I can't do everything myself, and I need help. It's a real gift to have that awareness, and then to have the courage to actually make the next step and ask for the help.
You know, we're all thinking about, many of us have already gone on vacation this summer, and we're thinking about, oh my gosh, what am I going to pack? But, you know, thinking about it in the big picture, every day is a journey in our life, and we're really packing for the next, many of us believe, I do, we're packing for the next journey, Father Robert.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us weigh that journey down with a lot of stuff, you know, whether that's, you know,
stuff,
physical, emotional, you know, financial, whatever it is. I mean, a lot of us weigh down that journey. And it's, you know, in a country where, you know, every other street has four or five of those, you know, storage facilities, I think most of us could probably do with less stuff. You know, and it, you know, you think, when I was packing for this trip, I remembered, I thought, you know, I used to be able to live out of my backpack for two months in China at a time. And now it's like I can barely get my shoes in a backpack. You know what I mean? Trying to figure out what are you going to wear from day to day. So it's always that, you know, these kind of trips are a good reminder that we have everything we need, even when we think we don't, you know.
All right, Father Robert, stick around. While you were gone, of course, we had an assassination attempt. I want to talk a little bit about the political scene with you after we take a break. It's the Buckmaster Show Tuesday edition. We will be right back with Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Cool.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We send a lot of our listeners over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, especially this time of year where many people are looking to escape the heat. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson to Silver City. It's a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment with an elevation of 5,000 to 7,000 feet, and we like to talk about how cool it is there compared to Tucson. 80 degrees, that's not half bad over in Silver City at midday with the elevation of about 5,000 to 7,000 feet. It is going to be cooler. And with all the rain they've had, the Gila National Wilderness, a great place to do some hiking. So check it out. Again, only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson, the starting place before you take your trip, southwestnewmexico.org. Father Robert Hendrickson is with us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Father Robert, we were hoping he would be with us in studio, but he is doing the next best thing with us telephonically because after his trip over to England, he came down with COVID, and there's still a lot. I know, actually, four people other than Father Robert that have come down with COVID just in the past week. So it's certainly out there. So folks, be cautious. Father Robert, you wrote in one of your newsletters after the assassination attempt of Donald Trump, you wrote, in a culture where politics has become our identity and new religion, every election cycle becomes a crusade, every rally a battle, every candidate a potential messiah, and violence an acceptable means to an end. Your thoughts, please, sir.
Well, that, what a brilliant piece of writing that was. In some ways stunned, but not surprised, if that makes sense, by the kind of horrific attempt on Donald Trump's life. I mean, the thing that still is shocking to me is just how much people have let the sort of political issues and identities sort of make them so angry at the wider world with one another and so afraid of each other. And that to me, I don't know how you keep a democracy healthy and vital if everyone's afraid of each other all the time or sort of angry with each other all the time. And of course, it's nothing new, but nonetheless, it certainly feels more tense in my lifetime than it ever has. And I and the the things that give us a sense of commonality and sort of shared purpose seem to have become less and less salient, and the things that divide us more and more prevalent and more sort of front and center. And the thing I always ask people is to think about, well, you know, if something in the news is making you angry, who is profiting from your anger? Because I really do think that there's a profit motive to keeping people angry all the time. And we've done ourselves a disservice by sort of siloing ourselves off in terms of the news we read and the channels we watch and the people we listen to. And so, you know, I think we've had a kind of a narrowing of our minds and our perspective that we've kind of self-imposed. And so, you know, it becomes harder and harder to see the humanity of other people if you only hear from the people who are saying that those people don't deserve to be thought of as human. And boy, it's a nasty situation to be in. And so, you know, the thing that strikes me is how much people will sort of invest in these elections. And politics, you know, if you think of the goal of a totalitarian state is for people to be obsessed with the state all the time, we're sort of imposing a totalitarian culture on ourselves. You know, politics should be second, third, fourth, you know, importance in our life. Our families, our faith, our work, all those things should take precedence. But it seems to me like that's all been inverted now, and all those things are being subsumed by a kind of constant obsession with politics as sport, not even politics as politics, but politics as some kind of sport or religion or identity. And it seems to be taking us down some dark places where I don't think any of us wants to go, but I'm not sure any of us has a clear picture of how not to go there.
You know, you brought that up about the profit motive. I was reflecting back to my days in television, commercial television news, before I came to Tucson in the Bay Area, and how in the commercial newsroom at that time there was the feeling you really want to sell a story with fear and loathing in it, because it brings them back for the 10 o'clock news or the 11 o'clock news. Throughout the day, you want to just keep this going, and people will tune in. Oh, the world's still here. I mean, but there was the fear factor that was very much part of the culture, at least the culture that I used to work in.
Yeah, I think it's so much the water in which we swim. I don't even think we quite realize just how dominant that kind of sort of prodding toward fear and anxiety and anger is, because it's just the water we live in right now. But it's amazing when you step away, sort of talking about one of the values of pilgrimage is to sort of step out of your day-to-day life, and you realize how quiet and kind the world really is. Mm-hmm. You know, and that to me is the thing that I think we trick ourselves into not realizing how much we have in common and really how decent people are for the most part. One or two news stories can skew the entire thing so that we suddenly feel like the entire world is you know, on fire. But when hasn't it been? You know what I mean? If the kind of media environment we had now had been in place in the 60s, my God, it would have felt like we were falling apart, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Or in the 40s or in the 20s, right? I mean, you go back to any decade, you know, in our history, if you applied this current media environment to those issues and those events, it would have felt like the whole thing was falling apart, you know. And so those, we have this kind of sense that, oh, this is a unique time. But I think what's unique is the way we've saturated ourselves with the worst of news.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Father Robert Hendrickson at St. Philip's, thank you very much. Hope you feel better, Father Robert.
Thank you, Bill. It's always great to be with you.
Thank you very much. All right, that's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Father Robert at St. Philip's and John on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster, saying we will see you back here in approximately 23 hours. We'll do it all over again, and I hope until then, be well, everybody.